It's going down right now with the Joseph Bard Podcast. Make sure y'all watch the Joseph Bard Podcast ringing off right now. I am the KID, the Kid Capri. You know what it is. Salute. Block party action. Me.
What's up? What's up, Thomas Garcia? That is our guest for today. We're back, the Joseph Bard Podcast. We had taken a huge hiatus. We had been off for about a good 6 or 7 months, but we're back. We are here to talk a little bit about Thomas Garcia, man. What's up, my man? How you doing?
Jay, I'm doing very well. It's been a very busy week, very productive campaign season, busy spring semester, and it's great to be here with you to talk about it all.
Whoa. Campaign season. Are you running for something?
Yeah, it might be new. It's a new campaign, first-time candidate running for State Board of Education District 2.
Oh, when State Board in, what state are you in, Thomas?
State of Texas, my friend.
All right, yeah, because you know we're pretty internationally known here on the microphone, here in the internet world, man. I mean, I know we have people listening in Nigeria, we have people listening in India. Shout out going out to Chib. Shout out going out to all my friends out there. We have an opportunity to touch base and talk a little bit about something that is very, very common for everybody, education. Go for it, man.
I love this topic because it's really what got me into connecting with people whose differences and similarities are stories I would have never learned about if it weren't for education. It's really what binds us together because we all get an education. The way we get it, though, is so different. And my own personal story in education, I think, it exemplifies that. I went to a private religious school, actually, from kindergarten to sixth grade. Not many people know this about me. I was in a totally different world for about 6-7 years. I slowly learned as I got older that this school wasn't like other schools, not just because it was religious, but also because it was unaccredited. The teachers there were not certified to be teachers. And if I would have stayed until 12th grade, I would have had to go get my GED even after graduating from the 12th grade. When I learned that, it took a while for my mom to convince me, hey, you love it here, but you got to go somewhere where you're going to get a different kind of education. And not just in the classroom, but meeting people from all these different walks of life. When I transitioned to public school here in Far Texas, LBJ Middle School, that was the first time I actually met students whose backgrounds looked nothing like mine. Students who were from all over town, not just a certain part of town. Students who believed in different kinds of religions, believed in different things. I can actually talk about different topics to them rather than the narrow set of topics I was so used to for 6 years. That was really what education was to me growing up, being able to talk to someone about things I had no clue about outside of the standard teacher to student relationship. And when I got to high school, that was just an even bigger culture shock to me when I went to PSJ North and I met students from different middle schools. Every elevation from K through 12 was like a whole new dimension, whole new world to me. Learning from different backgrounds, learning that I am not just alone in my struggles as well as a low-income student, that just changed my life.
Interesting, man. I mean, it sounds like you had a wealth of an opportunity to understand life at a very young age. I mean, because not everybody goes through that, what you just discussed about being into that type of school setting. But public education is something that everybody else knows. So when you mentioned this school that was not accredited, I mean, did your mom know that it was not accredited? I mean, how did you guys understand that it wasn't accredited?
You know, my mom comes from a background where she wants to put me in a good school. And her definition of a good school back then was, it's religious, it teaches you good morals, it must be good. It wasn't until she started attending some of the graduations where she saw the graduates get a rock instead of a high school diploma, that she started to question things. This school was never forthcoming about what it meant to be accredited or what it meant to be a good school. And because of my family's background, we didn't have the resources or the information to really assess what is a good school, actually. What are the metrics of a good school? It took a couple of years for us to realize this school is not the place to go if you want a high quality education in terms of academic quality, in terms of meeting students from different backgrounds, in terms of getting educated in a critical setting, not just a setting where they're inserting information in your head. When my mother learned that, she slowly transitioned me away from this school model in which I was really just sitting in front of a desk facing a wall doing work throughout the day. The teachers were not accredited, were not capable of teaching lessons. So we were just for 8 hours a day facing a wall doing our workbooks. That was what academic education was to me until I transitioned to middle school at LBJ. And that is when I realized, wow, a teacher is someone who teaches in the front of the classroom and you can go to them if you have questions. And beyond just the subject matter, they believe in you. They want to help you succeed in and out of the classroom. That was totally new to me by the time I got to LBJ.
Interesting. Interesting. So this religious school, it was in the same area of vicinity of where you were living at in Texas?
Yes, I'm from FAR Texas. And all these three schools, this religious school, LBJ Middle School, PSJ North, all in the city of FAR. I was born and raised here in a single mother household. It was just she and me growing up. And together we were able to talk openly, even when I was as young as 12 years old, about what that meant. So her sitting down and telling me and admitting to me, hey, this school isn't that great for you. Actually, there's better opportunities for you if you go to a big public school. She talked to me like I was an adult and saying, look, here is what you're getting now. Here's what you can get if you were to go to this different school. And it's going to be a struggle because you're going from a school with about 100 students to a school with about 2,000 students. Yeah. And I remember the first day walking into LBJ and seeing the rush of students when the bell rang going into their classrooms. That alone was so educational to me beyond what I was learning in the classrooms. There's more people out there. There's people from all across the FAR San Juan Alamo area where I live that is coming to the school not only to get an education, but also to become friends with one another in order to learn from one another's backgrounds, to actually talk and listen and learn from each other. That, it seems so intuitive, was brand new to me at age 12.
It sounds like your mom was very, very aware of how present she needed to be into your life, being a single mother. I want to take this opportunity right now to just talk to our listeners. And if you're a single parent, you know, it's very important for you to understand that, you know, you're not alone and you're not the only, you're not the first and you're not the last person that has gone through that same struggle. It might be a struggle at first. However, being present in the moment of your children will reap its benefits. As I'm listening to you speak, it sounds like you have definitely, and your mother has definitely reaped these benefits of seeing you grow into a man, seeing you be productive, seeing you reach for this position in which you're in, campaigning and trying to be something, trying to do good for your community. So big shout out going out to your mom, man.
Thank you, Jay. I mean, it means a lot because I saw even at an early age how much she had to sacrifice to make all that happen. You know, her story is she was going to college. She got her associate's. She didn't get her bachelor's. She had to drop out of school in order to take care of her own parents. And by the time she had me as a single mother, she was balancing both taking care of her own parents and then taking care of me at the same time. The opportunity to complete her education just was not there for her. So the very least she could do in her eyes was invest as much as she could into my education. She never knew what it was like to go to a four-year university, much less going out of state like I did to a college. But she supported me every step of the way, and she did everything she could to make sure that I got a high-quality education, no matter where I was at. And I am forever indebted to her for that. I imagine being in her shoes, talking to me at age 12 about why I needed to move schools. And encouraging me in high school, no matter where you go to college, make sure you go somewhere where you're going to study something you're passionate about. Don't do it for the money. And when you do that thing, make sure you can come back and give back to your community, because that's really what it's about.
Now, here's the thing, man. Like, I've seen a lot of children. You know, I've worked in the public educational sector for almost 14 years as a teacher, as an administrator, currently as an administrator. You know, and we tend to see items come forward when we talk about single family homes. Is that an obstacle? I mean, how does an individual that is maybe 12, 13, 14 years old going through middle school deal with things like that? What do they need to do? What would you say to that 13-year-old, that 14-year-old that is in that current situation?
I was a very blunt and straightforward 13-year-old. I would have told myself, look for new role models. I didn't have a dad growing up. I wasn't conscious of what that meant until I got a little older. I always understood the practical reality but there was one other person in the household. There was one revenue stream. We had certain opportunities and others were not in our reach because of the lack of money. And if there was one more person with an income, maybe some of those opportunities would have been in reach. But what I've always viewed because of that situation is that my mother serves a very particular role in my life, but so do teachers, so do coaches, so do pastors, so does anyone older than me at any given time. Today, I'm a huge proponent of what I call near peer mentorship, which is anyone age 19 to 25, a college student, a college graduate, or someone who just recently got out of the high school system, who can come back and give back in a big sister, big brother mentorship role to high school students. I wish I would have had that when I was in high school. I was conscious that I had adults who cared about me, but not someone who was slightly older than me who can tell me, I was in your shoes a couple of years ago. Here's how I can help you along the way. Avoid the mistakes I made. Even at a young age, I realized I want to become that mentor I didn't have growing up. So to a young person, I would say, those people are out there. You just got to go find them.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and sometimes you'll get lost along the ways. I mean, oftentimes you'll get lost along the way. However, that's life. You know, you try to figure it out and you try to move forward from place to place and just make sure that we do things, do good for good, right? Man, I'm really enjoying this conversation. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, after you finished high school, you know, you mentioned that you went away to college. You know, what was your experience there and where did you go? Because if I remember correctly, you went to an Ivy League college. Am I correct?
Yes, I had the fortune of getting into Princeton University, and it wasn't easy. From freshman year of high school, I learned on my own, if I were to get into an Ivy League school like Princeton, I would get in essentially for free on a full ride financial aid package, not on a scholarship, because my mom and I just made so little money. And so that set the tone for the rest of my high school career. My mom worked hard to where I never had to get a job. I could focus 100% on my education. So I got involved in the community, into leadership positions. And that slowly developed me into the type of student who was going to have the audacity, coming from a background like I had, who had to overcome a lot of educational obstacles, catching up essentially because of my background in that religious school. And then having to overcome some systemic barriers, like not having enough info, not having a mentor in order to even apply to a place like Princeton, much less get in, much less transition there, and much less graduate. When I got there, the biggest struggle in my view was the culture shock. It's visual privilege that you see everywhere you look. The school has a disproportionate amount of students from families from the top 1%. And when you look everywhere, you notice that this is a place unlike any other. You're getting students from all over the world. So that was just a whole other dimension and level to me, coming from that small parochial private school just about 6-7 years earlier. Every couple of years, I was exposing myself to a new dimension of diversity and new types of students. Princeton was just on a whole other universe when I was meeting students from all over the world. And they were telling me what it's like to grow up in Afghanistan, in Australia, and Europe, all these countries I never even heard of. Right. That alone opened my eyes to the fact that education can be a powerful tool, not just in the classroom, but what you learn from someone sitting next to them in the dining hall, what you learn in between lectures, listening to your friends sit next to you and talk about what it was like to grow up in a country you've never been to, or share a perspective on something they're very passionate about that otherwise you wouldn't have learned about until they shared that with you.
Yeah, I always like to say that that's the beauty in life. You know, once you start understanding a cultural awareness, you start understanding that there's more to life than just where you are. And you know, oftentimes the gate to all of that is just a simple book that can get you to read and get you to create that visual imagination into your mind. But needless to say, man, you carry a lot of information with respect to why you love education. But talk to me a little bit more about, why is it important? Why is education like number one? Like I think I heard it, but I just wanted to just summarize it in your own view.
Growing up, I watched my mom work so hard as a retail worker, and she always associated what she was doing with her lack of educational opportunity.
Yeah.
She always used to tell me, get your education, go far, and then come back and give back to your community. I always associated her labor struggles with getting a good education growing up. So to me, education was always the key out of poverty. how exactly I got that education and where I got it. Those were the subjective elements. But what was objectively true always was I was going to go to college. I was going to get a bachelor's degree at least. And I was going to do something with that in order to uplift my community. My mom always emphasized, don't do it for the money. Because if you do something for the money, you might get a short-term benefit, but in the long term, you're going to be miserable doing something that is only in it for yourself and not for others. So whatever you do, even if you don't get paid as much as you want to get paid, as long as you're living comfortably for yourself and you're actually doing something that brings you meaning and happiness, you're always going to be fulfilled. I took that to heart growing up. That's why I decided to become an English major. And that's ultimately why I decided to go into education, first becoming a high school teacher out of college, and then taking my high school curriculum on college access and turning it into a nonprofit organization. So neither becoming a teacher nor being a founder of a nonprofit is exactly lucrative, but I do it because I know it makes a big impact in young people's lives. And to me, as long as I'm uplifting young people, then I am living a meaningful and happy life.
Amen, brother. I appreciate all that insight, man. Now, again, you get elected, man. You have an opportunity to impact regions. You have an opportunity to impact a lot of children, a lot of individuals in high school, you know, to say, hey, you know what? I can reach out to Thomas Garcia. Thomas Garcia will be my voice up there, and they can take me into account, you know, when they make their suggestions for curriculum, when their suggestions for finance, etc. Yeah, man. So, Thomas, hey, it's been a pleasure. The Joe's Bot Podcast, we're back. You know, Thomas Garcia, I appreciate the time that you've spent here with us. It's been a great ride, and here we are once again. Anything you'd like to say?
Yes. Well, first, Jay, thanks so much for having me on. I'm a Democrat running for the State Board of Education District 2, covers Hidalgo County, Cameron County, all the way up the Gulf Coast, past Nueces County, all the way to Matagorda County. Early voting starts February 14th to the 25th, and then Election Day is March 1st. Get out the vote, and thank you so much for giving me the time.
Yeah, no, not a problem, man. I appreciate you for being here on our podcast. And once again, like, share, subscribe. Let everybody know, you know, Joe's Bot Podcast is where it's at. Let's go. All right, stop recording.